Message for this morning, which is Daniel, the book of Daniel. In the Old Testament, Daniel, chapter 1. Daniel, chapter 1. Reading the whole of the chapter, starting from verse 1. Daniel chapter 1, starting from verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, and to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel proposed to in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king." So Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servants." So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink, and gave them vegetables. As for these 4 young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. We are in this series of talks on the theme of Christian parenting. We have already covered the first talk last night. And last night we already looked at our role as parents. And this morning we desire to look at the personal development of our children. From last night's talk, we learned that the Lord Jesus Christ, while developing, showed that there are 4 areas of concern. There was the mental development, there was the physical development, there was the social development, and there was the spiritual development. And because of the shortness of time and the nature of the things we are considering, it seems best that we put the mental and physical development together under one, developing the person, so the personal development of the children. And that is what we want to consider this morning. And we want to focus on the physical and mental development in that order. First the physical, and then the mental development. When we come to consider the physical and mental development of our children, you discover that most parents have no problem in these areas. They don't realize that the problem is that they think they have no problems. They don't realize that they have still much to learn. They think they know so much. And that is why we need to be awakened to the realization that all of us are still learning, and there is no end to learning, and there is always room for improvement. You think you have raised your children well enough all these years without the guidance of the Bible? You think that the Bible is meant only for doctrine, failing to see that it has much to say about the physical development of your children, about the mental development of your children? There are those whose children have grown somewhat and they pride themselves in having done well. But my question to you, my challenge to you is this. Take your son or your daughter and compare with Daniel and his friends. See? Can you say that your sons or daughters are as good as Daniel? Look at Daniel and his friends. Even before they were sent to Babylon, they were chosen and as the cream of the society. They were already full of wisdom. They were already very knowledgeable people. You look at verse 3 onwards. Then the king instructed Aspinas, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles. Young men, whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language of the, and literature of the Chaldeans. The cream was going to be chosen so that they will be taught further. There was no end to learning, and they have to be fine-tuned to serve the king. But note, the basic qualities of these young men were already there. They were full of knowledge. They have already gained much knowledge. They were full of wisdom. And physically, there was no blemish. And no blemish doesn't mean there were no scar, not blind in one eye. Without blemish means that they were physically fit. They were tall, good-looking, stuffed people who are not softies. They are people who, from the looks, you know, this we can do more for him so that he will be even better. So all around, physically, mentally, in the way they carried themselves, they were all people who were of a certain stature already. Then they were taken away to Babylon to be improved even further. Okay? Now, we recognize the hand of God in our lives. All of us are not made equal in that sense. We say we are equal in that we are all sinners in God's sight. We are all equally loved by God when saved in Jesus Christ. We all are given gifts of various kinds. And when we are strong in some areas, we often find ourselves weak in certain areas. We are weak in certain other areas. We find we are strong in others. So if you are short in stature, don't envy those who are tall. Those who are tall, don't be despising those who are short in stature. And we take into account the fact that genetic differences are there. Some are more prone to sickness, some are less. But having taken into account the sovereignty of God in distributing things according to His will, we nevertheless take note that we have to be the best that we ought to be. And parents have their role to play to make their children the best that they can be. So you take pride in the fact that you have raised up your children well enough. But let me put the challenge before you that if you were to take your son or your daughter and compare with Daniel and his friends, are they like Daniel and his friends? Are they as the best that they can possibly be? And I'll tell you, if you have any humility, you'll say, no, I have failed. I failed. I could have done much, much better. So don't you ever think that there is no need to learn in this area of physical development and mental development of the children. Don't say that, you know, the church can teach me doctrine, but don't come and teach me all these things. You see, the Bible has much to teach us about these matters, and we want to see what the Bible has to say about these two areas, the physical and the mental development of our children. So believing the Bible to be our authority, we want to consider what it has to say on the personal development of our children. The purpose, therefore, of this talk is to consider the responsibility of developing children physically and mentally. So we come to the first section, the physical development of our children. Now, under this first section, again, there are two main points. The first main point is that the physical body was created very good by God. You must remember that when God first created all things out of nothing, He declared that His creation was very good. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 30, we are told, "Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, I have given every green herb and food, and it was so." Then God saw everything that He had made, and indeed it was very good. So when God is satisfied with what He has created, He declared everything He created as very good. We must believe it's really very good. If some things were created small size compared to big, those that are big size, God says, still say the small size is very good. So if there is this little cat compared to this big elephant, you say it's the size-wise, they are so different. One is so powerful, one is so weak, relatively speaking. But to God, that cat is very good, just as that elephant is very good. If the creature that crawls on the earth cannot fly, and see, compare it with the bird that flies, you cannot say, well, the bird is so grand, so wonderful, flying about. Look at that beautiful eagle soaring over the hills. See? But you must remember, God treats that eagle as very good, but He treats that creature that crawls on the earth as very good as well. We know that sin came in. The highest of God's creation is man. So God created all things in all the other days, but on the sixth and last day of creation, He created man. And He created man as the apex of His creation, as the summit, as the highest point of His creation. And man is created in the image of God, with the ability to appreciate things that are spiritual, with the ability to understand the concept of worship, with the ability to rule over all creation. So you see now that man is the highest of God's creation, and God intended all things to be given to man for him to enjoy richly, and so that he may glorify God. We know, however, that when Adam, as the representative of the human race, fell, he rebelled against God. He did not obey God in that one command that God told him to obey, under the instigation of the devil. When that fall occurred, the whole of creation was affected. Do you realize that? That all creation was tied to Adam. And when Adam fell, the whole of creation was affected by sin. That is why the whole of creation is groaning up to now, such that we know that there will be no deliverance until that day when the whole universe is made new. But why will the universe be made new? Because God's people are being redeemed. And we are being redeemed now when we turn from our sin to trust in Jesus Christ. In principle, we are already under the rule of God. We are already in God's kingdom. And we are in the process of being sanctified, being in the process of growing holier and holier, being prepared for that great day when everything will be melted down, then the new heavens and the new earth will be created in which righteousness dwells. All evil will be taken away to be consigned to hell. Hell has no place in heaven. Heaven will not be spoiled by hell. Hell is separate totally from heaven. And heaven will be on earth because the new earth will be in heaven. And righteousness will be everywhere. Now we are being prepared for that great day when we will be there. Then you will realize that the whole universe, which has been dragged down by the fall of Adam, has been renewed as well. That is why in Romans chapter 8, verse 19, we read, "For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." So God's children will be liberated from sin, but the whole creation that is created for him to enjoy will be liberated as well. Okay? Now back to the fact that we are all created very good. If God created everything very good, let us remember that our physical bodies has been created very good as well. And although affected by the fall, let us not forget that God created even the body, and the body was regarded as very good. If you argue that since the body has been affected by sin, therefore it is no more very good, and therefore to be looked down upon, not to have any attention paid on it, then what about your soul? See, your soul equally has been affected by sin, and therefore you don't care about it, you regard it as useless. And you look at the universe, it has been affected by sin, then you regard it as useless, you don't care about it. But no, you must remember that although the image of God in man has been marred, has been scarred, has been made dirty by sin, but nevertheless, basically the image of God is there, and God wants to redeem us. God wants to remove the effect of sin from us. And so also with the universe. So we must see that God is still in control, and God desires to redeem things unto himself. God wants to buy back things unto himself. God wants to remake things so that things will be good again. There will be those who are cast to the damnation of hell. There will be some things that are destroyed. But we must remember that God is going to remake things out of the things he has already made. He's not going to make all things out of nothing, like the first time. But when Christ returns, he will remake things. It's almost like a car that has been used for many years, and it is breaking down in different parts, so you do not want it anymore. You sell it off, it is dragged to the junkyard, and in the junkyard, the car is crushed and then melted down, and then the rubber parts will be separated from the plastic parts, metal parts, and so on. The paint and so on. Everything will be melted down and all the constituent parts will be separated. Then the metal will be poured and then cast into the frame of a new car. The rubber will be remolded into different parts of the car. And then the car will be fitted together and you have virtually a new car, a brand new car. The dross has all been burned away. The dirt all has been taken out. But it's the same car, but it's of a different quality. It is new. It is made brand new. So when God returns to recreate the world, it will not be creating things out of nothing, but rather the remaking of the things that has already been made. So understand, therefore, that our body is to be treated with care, with respect, and the body must not be pitted against the soul as though the soul is somehow good and precious and the body is useless and being a hindrance, a trouble to us. Now, that type of thinking permeates many cultures. And long ago, in the early part of the church, in the early history of the church, a teaching like that has come about, and it is called Gnosticism. It looks upon the world as consisting of dualism. You have positive, negative, you have male, female, you have yin and yang, like the Chinese philosophy. You can put it that way if you like. And you have spiritual and material. And the basic idea is that the spiritual is good and valuable. The physical part of us is a hindrance and it is not good. It is evil. And so we must try to break away the spiritual from the control of the physical, such that when the physical has no more control over our spirit is freed and our spirit will develop to its fullest, our spirit will be pure. Now that type of teaching is not biblical. It is wrong teaching. So don't be influenced by any form of Gnosticism in any way. The Bible's teaching is that the body is good, it is redeemed together with our soul. And 1 Corinthians chapter 15 shows to us that one day our bodies will be made new. So in 1 Corinthians 15, in verse 42, we are told, so also is the resurrection of the dead. The body is sown in corruption, it is raised in incorruption. It is sown in dishonor, it is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness, it is raised in power. It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body, there is a spiritual body. And so it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam, that is Christ, of course, became a life-giving spirit. And we are told in the same chapter, verse 51, behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. So please be convinced that the body should be regarded as precious. It is a gift of God to us. It is therefore right for us to take care of our body. Don't just have spiritual input and think that the spirit is the part that is precious to you, that is important to you, and you don't care about your body. No, you must take care of your body. And of course, in anything right and good, people can take to extreme and people can abuse. So just as we are saying that the body is good, it is to be treated as a gift of God, it must be taken care of. We know that there are those who go to extreme, who focus so much attention on their body to the neglect of their soul. And there are those who take care of their physical beauty and don't focus on the inner beauty of the heart. We know that that happens. But take note that there are those who have a false sense of spirituality and they fail to take care of their body. And we must understand correctly what the apostle meant when he said in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8, he tells us in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8, for bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. Now note that the apostle does not say that physical exercise is totally useless. He's making a comparison that often it is that you neglect the spiritual needs, your spiritual needs. In those days, in the Roman world, people were all focused on physical exercise. Today, you think that we have gyms everywhere. People are so concerned about physical exercise. But actually, in the days of the Romans, they were even more so. People were enrolled in various schools of sports, wrestling and boxing and athletics, and they took part in the various games, including the Olympic Games. And everyone knew that they had to train very hard in order to succeed in any of these games. It's almost like when the football season comes, you discover everybody, even children, would be playing football, and everybody aspire to be a football player in a well-known club one day. Okay? Something like that, or the NBA games come about, basketball, and then everybody somehow begin to play basketball for a short period of time, then they lose interest after that. But the point is that in the time of the Romans, people all focus on physical training so much. And Paul is saying, While I'm not saying that you totally drop this, while I'm not saying this is totally useless, but you have neglected your spiritual needs. And in fact, physical needs are only for this short season of time on this earth. But if you focus on godliness, you discover that it will be useful for all eternity. So understand correctly that Paul is in no way condemning physical exercise nor the taking care of your body. The same thing can be said about 1 Peter chapter 3, when married women are told, don't focus on the external beauty of braiding your hair and so on and so forth, but also take note of the spiritual, the inner beauty of the heart. Now Sarah was a godly woman who showed forth this inner beauty of the heart when he called Abraham Lord. Don't wrongly draw the conclusion that therefore once I'm married, I'm not bothered about how I look. Then you become gross fat and then you don't take care of your face anymore. You don't take care of how you dress. You see, now that would be a wrong understanding of the passage altogether. Okay? So we must be very careful. Understand that the physical body is precious in the sight of God as well. You have a duty to be the best that you are, including in your physical health. Now, how have you grown up? Have your parents taken care of your physical health? And especially if they are Christian parents. And I wouldn't be surprised if many of you realize your parents have failed in this area. They haven't taken care of your physical health. Now, look at yourself as parents. Have you focused sufficiently on the physical health of your children? We tend to overdo things. Either we focus too much on one, forgetting the other, or focusing on one and forgetting the first. Now, physical development, the second point, physical development must be regulated by the food intake as well as exercise of the body. You cannot run away from this. See? Energy input and energy output must balance up, and whatever else goes to accumulate in your body. You want to have all the various dieting formula and so on, and it sounds so complicated and so impressive. But finally speaking, it is this. How much energy you put in and how much energy comes out, it will determine what you will be. So when the child is growing up, make sure that you give the child good food. But good food must not be confused with rich food or fanciful food. Make sure you give good food. And good food means that when the baby is born, the mother's milk is the best. And up to now, people still cannot debunk the fact that the mother's milk is best. And common sense will tell us, if God makes us to be mothers and mothers have milk for the babies, surely that milk must be best for our children. Those who want to promote cow's milk or whatever other milk would sometimes try to say negative things about breastfeeding. But the fact is, breastfeeding is always the best. And it contains all the hidden things apart from food for growing. It includes things like vitamins, enzymes, it includes things like the immune system, the things needed for the baby to be immune from diseases. All these are there. And again, anything right and good can be abused. Some mothers just feed their children, and beyond 2 years old, the two-year-old child, you imagine he's running around, he's talking around already, he can interact with adults in conversation already, still coming to be fed on the breast milk of the mother. And that I would regard as overdoing it. And where do we set the line? It's hard for us to set a line when you stop. And common sense will have to dictate where you stop. And I would say anything from 1 year onwards, 1 year to 1.5 years, you should consider stopping milk feeding already. By then, you should already begin to consider giving semi-solids, blended food. Food today, we have the blending machine, is so easy. You don't have to pound until half dead, don't have to boil until all the good vitamins all have been destroyed. No need for that. Today there's blending of the food, so you can start feeding this semi-solid food. And be very careful that along the way you want to make your children eat well, they lose appetite. So you think, oh, he needs multivitamins and so on. So you feed multivitamins, you give liquid ones and sweetened ones, and so they take, so they improve in their diet. Then you buy branded food and Heinz food and things of that nature. Don't go too far. While many of these are convenient for us, be very careful that you don't have artificial things added too much. What if you buy the latest product and it has this and has that? Then a year or two later, after your children have consumed for a year or two, you discover a scientist come up with a new finding and say, hey, this product, stop, don't eat. This is cancerous or whatever. Then it's too late. You have already consumed all this. So try not to be carried away by all these artificial things. Normal, the natural things are generally the best. God created all this for us to richly enjoy. Common sense will help you to know that there is no need to spend money on artificially produced food. You can get the same good value from natural products, and you can blend them together in such a way that is healthy for your children. And there is no need to spend so much money on all these things. Okay? So good food does not mean rich food or fancy food. And as the child grows more, be very careful of junk food. Don't give the children junk food too much. And then fizzy drinks especially. You know? So we don't want to go to such an extent as to condemn those who take fizzy drinks. It is up to people's liberty. And especially when you are adults, you have want to enjoy fizzy drinks. You know fizzy drinks, carbonated drinks, you know, Coca-Cola, you know, Mountain Dew and this type of thing. You know? That's what I mean. 7-Up, Sprite. Okay? When they are young, it is best not to get them to enjoy this type of things too much. Do you not know that the sugar content is extremely high? Huh? And then what other additives are there? So while they are young, it is not good to give them too much of these things. Once in a while, maybe, but don't let them cultivate the enjoyment of it, and then they're constantly wanting more. Be very careful. Then as the children grow bigger, you must ensure that they don't miss the main meals. Generally speaking, in this part of the world, we have three main meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Yeah. Anything more, you must be very careful. The child might put on weight, you see. And anything less, you discover that along the way, they are growing, they need food. And if you have anything less than the three main meals, you discover in between, they will gobble up on junk food and other things. Yeah. And I would say, keep the main meals there, and in between, if they can have other things. But don't go to excess, because if they are going to affect the taking of this extra food, if it is going to affect their main meals, then you have to tell them to cut down. See? They can eat other things, but don't miss out on the main meals. And while having meal together, make sure that you teach them table manners. Don't allow your children to run around and their mother chasing after the child, feeding the child. Up to now, Christian parents are doing that. And we don't want to embarrass them and take them aside there and then and say, hey, this is not the way to raise up your children. Sit at the table. See, if necessary, make a baby chair. Buy a baby chair for the baby. And then as he grows older, he's tall enough, sit on the normal chair. If not, put something on the normal chair so that he's high enough. But once he's at the table, make sure he doesn't get down until he finishes his meal. Yeah. And that way, it saves you a lot of exhaustion and saves you a lot of embarrassment when you go out to visit another family or you have a wedding dinner to go to and you bring along your children. You don't have to see them running around. You have to make them sit still. You have all the difficulty. So you put a lot of stress upon yourself, physically and emotionally, because you have not taught them table manners when at home. And as they grow older, they go to school, sometimes they come back at different times, you can't have all the children together, you can't have everybody have a meal together. But make sure that you set a rule that at least one meal a day is to be taken together as a family, and generally that is dinner time. Once in a while, when they tell you in advance they have something special, they are unable to be back on time, that is okay. But as a general rule, we want one meal at least together as a family. Having a meal together is so important. We can develop this doctrine of meals from the Bible, of eating in the Bible. From beginning to end, there's eating. And eating together speaks of fellowship. And that is why missionaries who go overseas, who go to the jungles and go to different cultures, if you don't learn to accept what is set before you, you discover straight away you are unable to communicate with that community. I throw in a story of a real situation where this friend went to a tribe in the interior of Sarawak, and he was served meat that was rotting with maggots crawling everywhere, and it was deliberately placed before him, and he knew it was a test. So he just observed how they ate, and they were observing him. So what happened is that they knew that that rotting meat was meant to be eaten. Just like that, with maggots crawling all over. So because he was alone there in that community, he knew the importance of passing this test. So what he did was he just casually pushed aside the maggots and then picked the soft parts and then started eating. And he saw the relief upon the faces of his host. See? And he knew he has won them. See? Then from then on, that test was not repeated. They just wanted that one test, whether this man, he comes to us, he claims to help us in agriculture and other things, but is his heart really with us? So he passed that test. From then on, other good food were brought to him. He didn't have to eat rotting meat anymore, but he went through it. And the same can be repeated in actual missionary situation. There was this missionary who went to South America, and as an honored guest, he was served the eyeball of a lamb, and it was boiled and cooked and put before him, and there was that eye staring at him, see, and he was supposed to eat that, and he knew that he had to eat that, otherwise he would have failed. He would not be able to win the heart of the people. Okay. Now, in our own experience, in the early days when we visited the interior of Sarawak, we were served things on cups and saucers that were not too clean, if by our standard. But we know that it's not for us to judge. And if these people have survived all this while, why can't we? So trusting in God, we just ate and then we just drank in order to win their hearts. Working among the slum people, you see these ladies, you know, they want to take their festive occasion cakes out, and they go and touch their hair while talking to us. See? These ladies pruning their hair, you know, and then they put their hand in to take the kueh for us. See? And while we were going to eat, we thought, hey, you know, but we just have a mental switch there, told ourselves, you know, imagine that part where she was pruning the hair was out. It's a totally different situation. You just take and eat. And it was so important because these are missionary principles. And of course, sometimes there are ways to get out of it. I hope I'm not getting too long on this. But to bring home the point well, you see, sometimes there are ways of getting out of this. Once with a bunch of pastors in the interior, in the jungle, we were served the chicken backside. And our friends were asking, what's this? I said, you just eat. And for myself, I just took a piece, and then I used the spoon to cut the skin, and then just eat the skin. And what happened to the big piece there? No, just chop, 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 and mix with the bones. Then it's not eaten. They didn't know. That was my trick. After eating, they realized what it was. Bishop's nose, the chicken backside. See? So they had to eat. Okay? So if you pandai-pandai, there are ways of getting out of it. But the point is that this is a general rule that we have to learn table manners. And back to this matter of eating, we must make sure that our children eat a little bit of everything. They can't choose what they like. For example, sweet things they would like, then they will eat more of the sweet things. And you know that too much of the sweet things would not be good for them. Or they like the meat and then they don't like the vegetables. Or if one or two odd ones might like the vegetables and not the meat, but we want them to eat a little bit of everything. So that way they have a balanced diet. And another thing is that there are norms that as the world becomes more globalized, we know there are norms. Different cultures have their different table manners, but it's good to be aware of the globalized culture, okay? So that while in our own culture, we can practice what belongs to us, but when in the company of others, at least we know what is right and what is wrong, so that we don't put off people unnecessarily. Apparently, in the Arab culture, you can slurp and you can eat, making a lot of noise to show your enjoyment. But most cultures in the world would look upon that as rude. And in our Chinese culture, we take noodles, especially we slurp. You see, and to other cultures, that is not acceptable. And this is where you must teach our children to be aware. So that when they go elsewhere, they know what constitutes acceptable manners, what is not. In our culture, we would scoop our soup inwards. We take a spoon and we scoop in and then we drink. But in Western culture, the correct way is to scoop out, see, instead of scoop in. But these are relatively minor compared to running around, compared to eating junk food, compared to taking only the food that they like. We must make sure that they don't run around, they take their main meals, and they make sure that they eat a bit of everything. And in our culture, of course, there is, you know, telling the older ones to eat, you say. So father eat, mother eat, tai go eat, and so on and so forth. See? Now, by all means, practice that because it is within our culture. But I'll just like to advise you not to overdo this and don't correct your children in too obvious a way in public. So when visitors come, I say, what must you do? Uncle, eat, and so on and so forth. You see, then it is a little bit showy. And as we go on in a Christian life, we come to realize that God looks at us deep in our hearts and there are these areas where, wait, are we... While it is right, it is part of our culture. Are we not overdoing it? Are we not parading ourselves somewhat to the people who are visiting? And are we not embarrassing our children a little too much? See? So if we can just quietly say, hey, you know, or something like that, some signal which they know, then it's done. Otherwise, there's no need to say, hey, what must you say? You know, and then they begin to say, was uncle so-and-so eat and auntie so-and-so eat and so on. Is rather showy. Yeah. Then as they grow, you must realize that they need exercise. Food is one thing, exercise is the other. And the exercise does not have to be special. Then if your family becomes very odd, people come to your home, you see your baby all doing exercise. Then that's very odd. In their growing years, they are naturally crawling, they are naturally running, they are playing. That will be their exercise. And as they grow older, you have to tell them to help in the house. And that will be their exercise. Don't think they are too young to help. And because you keep thinking they are too young, that is why they never learn. See? And up to now, you're 16 years old, 18 years old, because your parents have been thinking you are too young. So up to now, you're still so underdeveloped. So when you suddenly interact with others, you come to realize you're so far behind in your table manners, in your social manners, in your development. So don't underestimate your children. Start asking them to help washing the dishes. Help them help to wash the rice, to teach them how to cook rice. And as they are tall enough, strong enough, teach them how to fry rice. And all these are skills that will be useful to them in the time to come. And when they go away from home because of studies, at least they know how to prepare fried rice. You heard the story of the fried rice, don't you? there is this boy who went to overseas to study, and he yearned for fried rice, and he just took rice and started frying in a pan. And how come it never worked out the way the mother prepared fried rice for him? He didn't realize that the rice has to be cooked first, and then the cooked rice is fried. Instead, he took the raw rice and started frying, and it didn't work. You see, and it's amusing to us, but you know, your pity, you know, a grown-up boy, a young adult going overseas, not knowing how to fry rice. And you want to prepare for your son or your daughter, especially daughters, your parents, you want your daughters to be matched up with a handsome, godly young man, you see. And how is your daughter? Is he saleable, as it were? You say, my daughter is not for sale. But you know what I mean, you see. That you want the best person to be your daughter's husband, but is your daughter suited for the best, you see. And you perhaps say, oh, you know, but my daughter has this degree and that degree. But my basic question is, can she fry rice? You see, if you can't even fry rice, you are not qualified. You see. And what the point that I'm basically bringing home is this, that as the children grow up, there's no need for special exercise or what, but in the home they should be already helping out. And that would constitute their exercise. And when they help to wash the dishes, they are practicing coordination, trying not to break the dishes and how to wipe the dishes to keep them, to wash them clean. So all these are practicing, helping them to coordinate, and meanwhile they are picking up skills. Yeah. And discipline is so important in the Christian life, and all this is training them to be disciplined. And as they go to school, of course, part of the school curriculum is that they have special physical education classes. You must encourage your children to join and to do well. Don't just grudgingly join. You know, I don't like that. Today got PE, you know, physical education class. You must encourage them to join in and do well. Don't just join in, but do well. Why should parents just encourage their children to score A's and to do well in their exams? Why can't they do well on the sports field as well? See? And again, see, perhaps many of us are not what we ought to be because we have neglected this area of our development. We are not as physical as we ought to be. See? We think that we have to choose between one or the other, and therefore we choose our children to score well in exams, but we neglected their physical development. Now you try and look around, you look at those who have scored well, see? Generally, they score well, but they have done well in other areas as well. And those parents who have wanted their children to do well in the academic line, they are not as good as others, see? So however much you push, you discover it doesn't help them. There's a limit to which they can go. But if they had focused on being all-rounded and have physical well-being taken care of as well, you discover they do better in their exams. And generally, those who really do well, they are also good at other things. And you force your children into just one mold and wanting them to do well in the academic area, you discover however good they are, not as good as some other people who happen to be also good at sports, you see. So this is where the wrong understanding comes. We fail to give sufficient attention to the physical development of our children. And don't be drawn into having homeschooling. If you really believe in that, we are not going to stop you. It doesn't mean you cannot be a member of our church if you believe in homeschooling. But we want to strictly tell you, don't try to spread this in the church. See, homeschooling might be necessary and helpful in some situations. It all began with missionaries on the mission field having to teach their children. So while on the mission field, they have to teach their children. So churches produce syllabus and syllabi and send to their missionaries. They train them. Then they begin to say, oh, in our home ground also, we need Christian education because the public schools are becoming more secular and immorality is being taught and evolution is being taught, and therefore they begin to start Christian schools and they begin to propagate homeschooling as well. So homeschooling and Christian schools. Christian schools perhaps not as bad as homeschooling, but generally this is the idea. People think that we must, everything must be under Christian control. The argument is that the spiritual input of our children is the responsibility of parents. While that argument is true, that way it is applied, I believe, is not right. You must see that there are things that we share in common with society, and one of them is being schooled together and interacting together with them. By having homeschooling, you're cutting off your children from interaction with others. You say, oh, but our families can still get together. You see how limited it is that your children have interaction. And then when it comes to expensive things such as having a science lab to perform your experiments, you discover homeschooling can't do that. So you limit your children to just the humanities, where there's no need for chemicals to perform chemistry experiments, no need for physics labs and things of that nature. See? It's a fact. Look at the Christian universities. They are often strong on the humanities. They try to introduce things like engineering and medicine and other things, but you generally discover Christian schools are very lacking in these areas. Yeah. So it all began with homeschooling, and you discover that homeschooling limits your children, and your children have no chance to attend sports day, join the Scouts movement, and be in a debating society and things of that nature. There's no inter-school games, inter-district games. You don't take part. See? Some churches are relatively more well-organized. They can have a little bit more of this. But generally speaking, they're struggling. Yeah? Because you are doing too much. Churches are taking upon themselves too much. And so we say we discourage homeschooling. We believe that going to the public school is good. You cannot overprotect your children. You cannot keep them immune from the influences of other teaching to such an extent that they become so insulated and they therefore are unable to stand when one day they have to interact with people of other faiths and come into contact with other beliefs. Okay? So be very careful. And as children grow older, you discover that they eat more and more, especially in their teenage years. Don't be alarmed. In the middle of the night, they might come to raid the fridge. So it will be wise for you to store up good food in your fridge. And it's good for them to look for themselves. Don't have to wait for mommy to cook for them. Let them raid the fridge. Let them cook their own Maggi Mee or spaghetti or sausages, whatever. Make their own toast. Get all these ingredients ready. Let them cook themselves. They make a simple meal in the middle of the night. They eat, but be careful. Overall, we do not want them to be too thin, such that when the wind blows, they get flown away. Or too fat, such that when there is danger, they are unable to run for their lives. When you go to a public place like the shopping mall, it will be interesting for you to sit down and observe all the young people that pass in front of you. See? And you discover that some are too thin, some are too pale. See? They're not healthy. And some are too fat, and the majority are overweight. See? Overweight. Way overweight. It's not good. See? And in later years, if they become overweight, at least you can say that is their business already, their responsibility. But you as parents, while raising them, we don't want them to be too thin, too weak physically. We don't want them to be too fat, obese. Then one day they blame you. They say, because you know from young I was already so fat. You say, so now I have difficulty reducing my weight. Okay? So these are some thoughts on the physical development. Now we come to the mental development of our children. And again, there are two main points. Firstly, growth in wisdom requires acquiring and using knowledge. We know that having knowledge is different from having wisdom. But in order to have wisdom, you must have knowledge. Okay? So having knowledge is just knowing a lot of things. But having wisdom is knowing how to apply this knowledge well in a given situation. So wisdom is different from knowledge, but nevertheless, in order to have wisdom, you must acquire knowledge. And when the Lord grew up in wisdom, you must remember that he was acquiring knowledge, not only knowledge of the Bible, but knowledge as a carpenter helping his earthly father to do the work of making furniture and so on. He must have learned how to measure, how to cut, how to do the joints and so on of the furniture. Then along the way, being in a farming situation, he would have done some farming work. And in his growing years, interacting with the other children, he would have picked up other skills. But when we come to talk about mental development, we know the importance of acquiring the tool for picking up knowledge, which means reading. You must have at least one language which you use. We are in a privileged situation where it's easy for us to pick up two or three languages, but try to master one such that it becomes your working language. And that language would be used for acquiring a lot of knowledge. And nowadays, with the globalized world, we know the importance of the English language. This is not to make the Englishman proud, but it is to show to us that in God's providence, English becomes the international language. And since we are in a situation where English is taught from early, it is a very, very powerful language which we must try to master. Then, of course, if you can pick up other languages, it is to your advantage. Really to your advantage. When you want to serve the Lord, you want to be useful in His service, you discover that acquiring an extra language is so very important. Language is the key to the hearts of the people you are trying to reach out to. But we are already going far ahead. Let us come back to our children. We want them to develop mentally. And this is where a love for books should be inculcated from early. It means that your family atmosphere must be right for the acquiring of knowledge. And this is where having a family library is so important. If you have all your books stored up in bookshelves nicely, and along the way accumulate different categories of useful books, you will provide an atmosphere in which your children knows is valued in your home. So he comes to that room. Ah, this is the home library. This is the book room. We call it a book room in our family. And this is the book room. So you have shelves and shelves of books, books of different types. And along the way, anything that you need, there it is, picked up. Yeah? And then bring them to public libraries whenever you can. And bring them to book shows, book exhibitions when you can. Picked up books along the way. So having a home library provides the atmosphere in which they grow up. But what is the point of having books if the books are not read? Of course, most of the books are meant to be referred to, but some books ought to be read. And as people who believe in the Bible, we want to raise them up in a spiritual atmosphere. And this is where children should have easily available books, Christian books suited to their ability to understand at that age. And again, don't underestimate children. They can actually pick up more than you realize. If you stretch them to the limit of their ability, you discover to your amazement they are able to acquire more skills, more knowledge than you realized. Okay? We want to remember how young Spurgeon was sent to his grandfather, who was the minister of a congregational church. If you read the biography of C.H. Spurgeon, his grandfather was in Stanburn. And there, he, as a young child, he used to sit in his grandfather's library and just devour the books that were there. He loved that place. He just, every minute he could find, he would go there and then he would just read the books. He had read Pilgrim's Progress even when he was a young boy. Yeah? So we want to provide our children with a library of suitable books. And what are some of the books that are suitable to them? Biographies, Christian biographies in particular, are useful. Of course, teaching books like John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, there is the original adult edition, there have been the abridged edition, there are those for children. They are useful, Pilgrim's Progress. Yeah. Christian biographies written suited for children. Today we have those books written by Jim Cromartie. He's a Presbyterian minister in New Zealand. He has written some excellent books for family reading. You should make them available and use them in your family worship. We will talk more about family worship later, but these are some of the books you should have available. Those books by this Jim Cromartie. Okay. Of course, the older writers will be things like books like by Patricia St. John. Some pronounce it as St. John, but most will pronounce it as St. John when it comes to people's name. So Patricia St. John has written some interesting stories. She was a missionary nurse in Morocco, and when she finished her time as a missionary, she was still in Christian service in UK. She started writing books. So one book after another was produced. Make this available. And as they grow older, of course, there are many other useful books that we can recommend. But don't underestimate the importance of reading Christian biography, Christian books. But at the same time, try to supplement with the appreciation of music. Many parents are able to send their children to music classes. That is useful. They pick up the skill of reading music notes and playing a basic instrument. But really, it is if you are unable to, or for whatever reason you have not been able to send your children to music classes, it's not needful. You can actually value singing, you see, and especially the singing of hymns. We should value singing hymns at home. So in family worship, in other situations, we want to be singing hymns. In the church, we try to encourage gathering together to sing hymns. Just the sheer enjoyment of sitting together to sing. Remember what Martin Luther said about singing? Say, next to the word of God, music deserves the highest praise. The gift of language combined with the gift of song was given to man that he should proclaim the word of God through music. So supplementing the mental development of acquiring knowledge, it is good to have appreciation of music. In the old days, we don't have opportunity to go to music classes. Only one or two in the class were attending music lessons. We envy those people. They play the piano or the violin, and in those early days, they had this privilege. So in a class of perhaps, let us say, for every 10, well, no, not even 10, let us say a class of 50 students, we have only one or two who attended classes. Today, for a class of 50, you expect 30 students to be attending music classes. See, in those days, we didn't have that opportunity. So what did we do? We played the harmonica, and we played the flute, and some picked up the guitar strumming away. They picked up themselves, and they learned to appreciate music. And amazingly, you discover the majority of those who attend music classes, they are only able to play music, play one or two pieces here and there. Those who pick up themselves, they play so many pieces of music. You see the disproportionate productivity compared to their opportunities. Those who have so much opportunity, they don't seem to appreciate it so much. They will play one or two pieces only. See? Those who pick up themselves, you discover they play more pieces. And those who have more opportunity to learn high, you discover they only know. See, but they don't produce. But those who don't have opportunity, they are the producers. They produce music for these people to play. See? So it doesn't mean that sending them to classes, spending much money on them means that they will be really that good. What we want is an appreciation of music to supplement their mental development. Okay? Then the second point is growth in Bible knowledge cannot be separated from involvement with the church. If you take your children out of the church situation, you are actually harming them. You are actually not allowing them to develop mentally as they ought. Some people thought that the less church, the more time they can in attending this class and that class. I would say cut down on the classes. Why must you send them to 5 up to 10 classes on top of their school? And you think that they will be better when time would be better spent around the church, interacting with people in the church. See? You send them to how many classes? Music classes, ballet classes, art classes, martial arts classes, swimming classes, already 5. See? Now we can multiply mental arithmetic and various other things. And soon you stretch beyond 5 to nearly 10. Why overload your children with these classes and that classes? Why can't you reduce to a bare minimum and focus more on the important things? So I would say, if your children love going to church, interact more with people in the church, attend the activities of the church, you come to realize that they develop mentally much better than people who do not have the opportunity to go to church. Just consider coming to church camp. Now, it might be once a year or twice a year, but by coming to the church camps, it makes them different from the children who have not the chance to come. Really, it makes a difference. See, really, you must believe that it makes a difference. But if you as parents have difficulty coming to church, you have no heart to come, you discover that you cause your children to lose out. But if you know the value of Christian fellowship and of learning God's word together, you will discover that it somehow has an effect on your children. Yeah? Then in the church, we have things geared towards developing the individual, our Bible studies, and then our so-called discipleship training program. All these are geared towards development. You pick a person who has been regular at DTP and a person who hasn't. You discover the person missed out so much. In the person's mind, he was thinking, oh, today they read that book, I can read also at home. But they never got to reading. See? And the years pass by, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, we have read perhaps 5 to 10 books. Those people who haven't been taught that they will want to attend one day, or they read themselves at home. You see, they'll make up somehow. But they never did. And those 4 or 5 books that we have read, it's not how many books you read, it is what sort of books you read. And by having read those books, it has paved the way for them to develop in so many other areas. See? And I dare say that the lady that you ought to be may be determined to a great extent whether or not you have interacted with the church. The young man that you ought to be will be determined to a great extent by how much you attend the meetings in church. You are less than what you ought to be because you have not attended all the meetings in church. See? And those who have attended the meetings in church, you must come to realize that God has blessed you with this opportunity. See? To be better by attending these meetings. Earlier we talked about books. We don't want to underestimate so-called secular books. God gives richly such that even non-Christians produce a lot of good things, and we must acknowledge that it is God's goodness shown in by his common grace to other people. There's such a thing as common grace. God causes his sun to shine upon everyone. He causes his rain to fall upon both the righteous and the wicked. You don't say, you know, I don't want to drive the car because it's invented by a non-believer. See, you don't think like that. See, you use many things that are produced by non-believers. Tell the young people, don't use your iPad and don't use your computers because it's produced by non-believers. See, now it will be foolish of us to think like that Rather, we must claim all this as belonging to our God. Our God gave you life. Our God gave you opportunities. Our God gave you the abilities. Do you not realize that? See, tell these people that whatever good they produce is from God. And in fact, they could have been better if they have known God through faith in Jesus Christ. It follows, therefore, that many of the writings are worthwhile reading because they are works of art. From young, for example, children should be reading Enid Blyton. Don't laugh at this and say, what? Enid Blyton? Up to now, we still talk about Enid Blyton. If your children have been read on the diet of Enid Blyton, they will be so different today. You see, these are wholesome books. In fact, much better than all these, Harry Potter and so on. I would say this would be written by non-believers who have a Christian background rather than the Harry Potter series of books. So this would be more helpful. Yeah. Read through all the various series. And then as they grow older, you discover there are older books. The Five Fine Outers and the Four Adventurers and various other series. And of course, as you go on, you can branch off into other areas. You know the series. Anybody knows the author? It's been long while since I. You know the Bigglesworth series. The fighter pilot, Bigglesworth. You Google, you find out the author, and then you try and read that series and introduce it to your children. It's about World War I, World War II, the fighter plane, and you see how they have dog fights and so on, and the camaraderie and the values that they have. See, all these are very helpful. And then as people grow older, you discover that there are other very good non-Christian books that are helpful. I remember in the school days being introduced to James Michener, and his books I thought are very readable. Then there are science fiction books, and if you haven't read science fiction book, you don't know how much you miss out. So science fiction books by people like Jules Verne, that is a very classic already. H.G. Wells, if you haven't read this, you're rugi, you lose out. And then the Isaac Asimov. Yeah? Yeah. Arthur C. Clarke. Yeah. These are good books to sample. Then, of course, you all know about Lord of the Rings. Instead of just watching the show, why don't you read the books? So, why don't you? And you discover the books is so different from the show. Of course, the show has its own wonderful aspects, but don't just look at the show. And do you realize that our boys read Tolkien long before the shows were produced? So these are helpful books that help them to be creative in their imagination. And one of them even began to put pieces of music to the different scenes in the book. And of course, the more modern writers are very readable. And even adults would enjoy some of these modern writers. So for example, read his book, he has a series of books. He's a Brazilian writer, but he has he writes very well, really, really very well. You just pick any of his books, you discover. And then of course, Husseini, He's an Afghan man. He's a medical doctor, by the way. He writes, Khalid Hosseini, he writes very well indeed. Really very well. I tell you, you admire God's work in them. And you say, oh, all this, you're introducing English book. But because English is my working language, I wish I had been taught in Chinese. Then you open my opportunities to other areas. And you who are Chinese educated, let me ask you how many of the Chinese books you have been reading? How well are you in Chinese literature? At least I'm aware of it and I've read the translation. I know the classics like Feng Shen Bang, San Guo Yan Yi, and Shui Fu Zhuan. Shui Fu Zhuan I enjoy so much because of the kung fu inside. Then the more modern this wuxia xiaoshuo, at least I have followed all this through reading the translations. You see? So don't just talk, but have you read? Yeah? Have you sort of enrich your thinking and yourself like that? And have you exposed your children to things that will help them develop mentally? Okay, we must quickly draw to a close. We want along the way to understand that mental development has to go hand in hand with character development, which will be the subject of our next talk. But here I just want to throw in the importance of values, such as being honest, being selfless, don't just think of yourself, and being hardworking. And in today's world where there's a lot of focus more on the computer and internet and your handphone, it would be good to help our children to realize there is great value in reading, cultivating the habit of reading. In the past, it was television, then videos. Now it's the computer, internet, and the handphone. It's a joke everywhere, but it is a fact. You go anywhere into a bus or any cafeteria, any shopping malls, anywhere where young people are gathered, take pictures of them. You discover all of them are on their handphone. You see, even going up the escalator, they're on their handphone. In the car, they're on their handphone. They're going on the trip. In the bus, they're on their handphone. Everywhere, they're on their handphone. Their eyes are just glued. You know, one foot, their focus is 1 foot away like that, you see. And we want to raise up our children not to be deprived of all this, but to understand that it is good not to be hooked to all this, but to cultivate more the habit of reading, appreciate reading. Reading requires patience, to read through a book, to be gripped by the plot, and then to want to finish it. See? And you don't have to read all books in the world, but if you can guide them into reading a few good ones, then have an appreciation of books. And apart from all this, there are the classics. What about Black Beauty? See, have you heard of Black Beauty? It's good even to start off your children while they are young on all this. Lorna Doone, have you? The Tale of Two Cities. Treasure Island. What is it? So of course, you say Sherlock Holmes and Agatha Christie. These are detective stories. Now, don't feel that you have to know everything. But if you are aware and then have samplings of this, it will be very good. Say, really very good. At least expose your children and for yourself if you can know all this. These are classics which along the way is good to get for your children and read together with them. They may be so-called secular books, but nevertheless they are really wholesome books that make them creative, widens their imagination, and you want to train them to be like Daniel and his friends. I tell you, you can't just be giving Christian things and claiming that the rest of the world is corrupt and you don't want to have interaction with the world. You are losing out. You are not being responsible as parents in that area. And if all these are really strange to you, I would say begin somewhere. Okay? You have, since becoming a Christian, you have been so holy, holy, buying a lot of books, reading only Christian books. Eh? Okay? Well, I don't want you to stop in that, but I would encourage you to try. Pick up, for example, Black Beauty and come and tell me later what is it all about. Read through Tale of Two Cities. Then perhaps, you know, read the Alchemist. And come and tell me, see whether you enjoy it or not. Okay? Go and read The Kite Flyer, Kite Runner. Just sample them, and then you come and tell me how you find them. You discover that you broaden your mind, you help you, and children in their growing years, their imagination will be stirred, and then you don't know how it will affect them in various ways in their development in later days. And it prepares them for the world. And with strong Christian background, with the church constantly surrounding them, you see, you discover that our children will be used by God to be of help to many people to lead the world. Okay? Now, we want to draw to a close quickly, otherwise there will be no end to it. We have considered the physical development, the mental development. We want to close by noting that true wisdom is not gained by accumulating knowledge, but by knowing God. Ultimately speaking, it is that. You remember Ecclesiastes chapter 12? You must note down this reference, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 12 to verse 14. What does it say? And further, my son, be admonished by this. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. Again, understand this correctly. Right? It's not saying don't read books, don't value books. It doesn't. It says, instead, you should be from a background where you value books. Yeah? Then from such a background, understand that much study is wearisome to the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. And this is where if you want to know God and keep up with spiritual growth, you must keep company with people in church. Remember 2, 2, 2, 2? Yeah? 4 times 2. 2, 2, 2, 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22. You don't fight the negative battles of avoiding youthful lust. Okay? But you must pursue righteousness. And not pursue it alone, but pursue it in the company of like-minded people. So these are passages that you want to take with you. Then we want to note that, finally speaking, we want God's approval, not the approval of man. We look at the great cultures of the world, and in this part of the world, we know Chinese culture is really rich. We have 4,000 years of written history, and you add another 2,000 of years of oral history. Chinese culture is so rich, we don't want to despise Chinese culture. Similarly, Indian culture is very rich as well, another old culture. And then in Egypt, the Egyptian culture. Then in the region of Iraq, the Sumerian culture. But in this part of the world, we know from a rich culture has come good things and values. And you know in China, in the old days, we value what we call Wu Wen Shuang Qiang, Wu and Wen together. You never are just a Wu man, a martial arts man. You are a scholar as well. And you don't want to be just a mere scholar, CC all the time, knowing only your books. But you have to be trained in the martial arts. That is why, in the old days, when you see a warrior, you see a book. So, for example, the so-called Guan Gong, Guan Li, you know, you see any picture of him with a fierce look there, and you look very carefully, he holds a book. You know, next time, you go to your friend's house, look at the idols on the wall there. They worship him as a god. But he was a real living man in those days, a well-known warrior. And here is this fierce-looking man holding it with a beard and the Kwan Tower. Huh? But you see him reading a book. This is to show that while he's a warrior, he is also a scholar. Then you see the picture of Confucius. Yeah? He's a well-known scholar, but he carries a chin, a double sword. That is the popular weapon of the scholar, and is the highest short weapon. To master the chin, the double-edged sword, is very difficult. To use a single-edged sword is easy. Yeah? You can master that more easily. But to master the use of the chin is very difficult. And when you see a scholar, the picture of a scholar, you see him wearing a chin all the time. So Wu and Wen, Shuang Qiang, you are strong in both, you see. But by being a Christian and learning all these Christian values, you discover we are even better. We have a richer culture than even the Chinese culture. We have much to contribute to the Chinese community. So value the fact that the Bible opens up to us the riches of God. Our God is the creator of all things. The first page of the Bible tells us in the beginning God created. So all cultures are subsumed under our God. Our God gave us richly all things to enjoy. And we are now coming to worship this God who owns all things, who created all things. So no wonder we have something much, much richer than even the Chinese culture. May God help us to appreciate what we have by knowing the Lord Jesus Christ.